Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the ShopTapes.com studios.
Thanks for being with us. It's a good Thursday. I want to thank Jeff Munn for sitting in yesterday. Yesterday, I was asked to MC an event in Scottsdale for the Waste Management Phoenix Open. I was in a room with big cigars, I call them, people with loads and loads of cash, and they wanted to talk about where the Open is and what I see through the years and what it is about Open Week, and with Phil Mickelson coming in and all that, there will be a tremendous amount of interest in the Waste Management Open in January, and the Thunderbirds and the great job they do. They raised $6.2 million for local charities this year, and people are just kind of like, it just blows right through them. But $6.2 million, that is fabulous by the Thunderbirds. Fabulous Thunderbirds, there you go. Play at the Bird's Nest. So we had a good time there yesterday. A lot going on today. Jake Plummer is going to join me in about 15 minutes. The Jake Plummer Show and the Fiesta Bowl and Jake Plummer winning combinations. We talk college football with Jake, UCLA, Oregon, the Jameis Winston Heisman Trophy pursuit. And I think I've got to talk to Jake. If Brett Favre's been called, I have to imagine. Eric, don't you think if Brett Favre has been called by the St. Louis Rams, that Kurt Warner had to have been called by the St. Louis Rams? He'd never admit to it, probably. Or that Jake Plummer would. If Josh Freeman is out there stinking up the NFL on a Monday night, are some of these guys that are just 5 years, 6 years removed saying, yeah, be kidding me, I could go get a check?
Kurt Warner sent out a tweet a couple days ago.
Yeah.
Not sure if you saw it. And it sort of alluded to the fact that, man, seeing these guys out here on Sunday kind of makes me want to come back.
Sure.
And then he said, nah, I'm good retired.
Well, but here's the thing. Don't you believe that given Kurt Warner's history in St. Louis, that if they picked up the phone and lobbed one in the direction of Brett Favre, that somebody within that organization said, I think we've got Kurt's number somewhere, you know, is it here in this Rolodex? See, Warner.
Yeah, they probably dug up the number, and
Warner.
Then whoever got that idea, the little light bulb went on.
Said, nah.
And saw Brenda Warner on the shoulder saying, this ain't happening.
It's not happening. Don't care how big the check is. Clark Judge is going to be with us on today's show. We'll talk all things NFL with Clark Judge, including Brett Favre. And of course, now the Vikings, Josh Freeman can't play this weekend because of a concussion. And now Christian Ponder is going to be back at it. Tonight's Tampa Bay game, is this it for Greg Schiano? A radio station in Tampa spent money on a billboard signed Fire Schiano. Of course they did. It's Tampa. Why not? Let's make sure that we get the word out. We want him out of here. If they lose tonight, he's done. I'm calling that one right now. Greg Schiano, if Tampa Bay loses tonight, I think they're going to lose. Then Greg Schiano will be fired by tomorrow. We sit here on the show tomorrow, he'll be done. And we have Michael Fabiano with us today, NFL Network fantasy editor. Guys, it's the midpoint of the season. I'm going to talk to Michael about the booms of the first half, the busts of the first half, who is going to boom in the second half, who are some busts in the second half, who are some guys that have been on injured reserve that are going to come back, where do you find running backs? Point is, there's going to be a lot of fantasy stuff later on this hour that will impact your teams as you're trying to go down the stretch. Of course, I'm in first place, so I will be paying much attention to that. Eric Sorensen has our Facebook question of the day as we get off and running on today's show. Facebook question, here's Eric.
Funny you should mention Brett Favre, Brad.
Yeah.
With Sam Bradford out for the year, torn ACL, the Rams kicked the tires on Brett Favre, who said thanks, but no thanks. Just kind of got us thinking.
Sure.
What NFC West team right now has a worse quarterback situation, the Rams or your Arizona Cardinals?
Oh, come on. I mean, you're just piling on Carson Palmer on this
one. I'm not
one.
Piling on.
Piling on. Would you say that Kellen Clements is better than Drew Stanton then? Are you saying that the Rams' depth, their second stringer, is better than the Cardinals' second stringer?
I would answer this question, the Rams have more problems.
You would answer the question that way.
The Rams have more of a quarterback issue than the Cardinals.
Oh, there's no question. Yeah, there's no question on that. That's pretty easy. Is anybody disagreeing with you on that one?
Not yet. Okay. But it just got posted a few minutes ago.
All right. Head over to facebook.com/pros2preps, like our page. Share your input. That's facebook.com/pros2preps. If you have not checked out Sports 360 AZ, that is the site that we do our thing at here every day, Sports 360 AZ. There was a story put up about 15 minutes ago by Jared Cohen on the high school end. And I push high school, college, and pros. They all work together here in the state of Arizona. We're Arizona-centric. It's a story that I will just tell you guys in advance, if you don't cry or get moved to emotions a little bit or even think about it, then you probably aren't wired in a way that emotions are in your system. It's terrific, and it's just about a high school kid that is playing football out in Chandler that you need to see it. It's really well done. Let's get you caught up some of the things on my mind in the world of sports, and it's brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino in the beautiful White Mountains on this Thursday, working towards the weekend. Head on out. I think you're too well to attend work tomorrow myself. I can hear it. I can feel it. You need to take a day off. Hey, honey. Or hey, buds. Let's go up and go fishing. Let's go camp out, and then let's walk on into the Honda Resort and Casino and pull the slots. Let's go fishing and try to win the biggest, baddest brown fishing tournament. Or maybe let's stay at the Honda Resort and Casino, stay at the resort, and stumble on in, have some fun, eat a little bit, have a couple pops, enjoy the weekend away. That's at the Honda Resort and Casino. That is in the beautiful White Mountains. Who would not want to get up this time of year to Pine Top and Sholo? Oh, man, it's gorgeous up there. It's the Honda Resort and Casino. The World Series last night, so not much of a game, except I did like what happened with the umpires. I am one of those that like the fact that the umpires actually huddled last night. I don't know if you saw it or not. In the first inning, a play that was clearly missed, a play that impacted the game in the moment last night.
Here's the pitch. Swing and a chopper to the right side. Charged by Carver to flip sideways to second. Dropped! He's going to say he's out on the exchange. John Farrell's going to come out on this. They're going to be safe on the corners. And the second base umpire, Dana DeMuth, is going to say Pedroia is out at second base on the exchange by Cosma.
That's a terrible call. Awful.
They're going to put him back.
Well, even though the call is right, Mike
Matheny. Here comes Petey. But wait a minute. They're going to bring Petey out. They're going to put him back on second base.
Wow.
And the bases are going to be loaded here with one man out for the Red Sox.
Okay, so we all remember Don Denkinger. We remember the blown call. And in that day, nobody would have run in and said, Don, you missed the call. Nobody did at the time. We're in a day and age now where baseball has changed. Some of you purists out there were not happy at all that the umpires huddled, they turned around, they reversed the call. So Mike Napoli comes to the plate with the bases loaded. Scoreless game at the time.
The 6-7 right-hander Wainwright delivers. Swing, and there's a shot. Rifle in the left center. It's out of the alley. It's on the grass. It's on the track. It's up against the wall. Ellsbury scores. Pedroia scores. Big Poppy turning around. He will score. He slides in. It's a three-run double. 3-0 Boston.
Okay, and so that turned the corner. Game goes on. Red Sox win going away 8-1, 3-0 at that point. The Napoli three-run double. Ortiz hit one out as well. The umps overturning the call. And I thought Fox did a very good job last night. Joe Torre, Ken Rosenthal went and got Joe Torre. And the bottom line is they got the call correct. But there's some of you that are hung up in the human element. You like the fact that umps miss calls, that baseball is not a perfect game. Here is John Farrell, the Red Sox manager, on the umpires and the way they played into last night's game.
Typically, you know, they're probably going to stand pat with the decision that's made in the moment. But like I said, they got the call right.
And that's, to me, we're in a day and age where the game has changed. Technology has changed the game. For those of you that didn't want that call to be reversed, either you're Cardinal fans or you're just stuck in the game. Well, I remember 1965. That's great. I'm not here to bash on your memories. But the world has changed. People consume things differently. If anybody can sit at their couch at home and see that a call has been clearly missed and the umpires get together on, and this is where replay is going to come into play. I don't know how far replay is going to go, but for those traditionalists on the baseball end of things that have not wanted to have umpires gather together or replay into the game, last night was a turning point. It clearly was a turning point. It'll be right there remembered with the Denkinger miss. It will be. And if you're a St. Louis fan, you lose Carlos Beltran. Now, the x-rays came back negative. That was a great play by Carlos Beltran, robbing David Ortiz of a grand slam. There was a lot there that I liked in last night's game. Tonight, it's Lackey and Waka. Waka, Waka, Waka. Waka is one of these guys that, remember Fozzie Bear? Waka, Waka, Waka. Waka's one of these guys that has had a great breakout season, but he hasn't translated as a kid breaking onto the scene like he would in other sports. This is one of those players that baseball needs to embrace, push out there in a bigger way. It's a big stage, obviously, for baseball to be on, the biggest stage of all for the season. Then you want to see Waka go out and do well tonight. Our buddy Jimmy Vaccaro readjusted the odds on the World Series. The Red Sox are now minus 250 to win the World Series over at South Point. Put down 100. Make it happen. Game two tonight. The Suns last night finally finished preseason. Eric Bledsoe at 21. They win there. Why hasn't an NBA team signed Jason Collins yet? Jason Collins, so we're at that point in the season where training camps are almost wrapped up. If I need a 6'11" guy to put on my roster to play inside, why am I not looking Jason Collins' direction? Is it any surprise that the NBA has not gone out and signed Jason Collins? There was a survey of NBA general managers that said the relentless media attention would play into that. He has come out as an openly gay NBA player. I guess I just see things much differently, and I just want guys that can play. If Jason Collins can't play anymore, that's one thing. But there's a lot of stiffs in the NBA that are 6'10" and taller. A lot of guys that can't move. And I'll be interested to see if Jason Collins does get an opportunity to play. We have some political correctness to get to, of course. No offensive Halloween costumes at the University of Colorado. They've told students don't dress up as the Washington Redskins. Of course they did. I mean, that's makes perfect sense to me. Brett Favre, going to get into that a little bit. The Cardinals game, all the injuries to the Falcons. This is a good setup for the Cardinals. Tell you what, the next 3 weeks are a great setup for the Cardinals. You have the Falcons at home. You have the Texans at home. They're no good. They have Jacksonville. They're in a good spot here. But are they any good? Jake Plummer joins me live next. Weekly college conversation. The Fiesta Bowl and Jake Plummer winning combination. UCLA, Oregon, famous Jameis, and much more. That's next with Jake Plummer. I'm Brad Sussmat.
React and interact to today's Pros to Preps question of the day at facebook.com/pros to preps.
Brad Sussmat with you. Time now for the Jake Plummer Show. Jake Plummer joins us every week, courtesy of the Fiesta Bowl. Jake Plummer and the Fiesta Bowl, that is a winning combination. When was the last time, I'll get to the college stuff in a second, I'm just curious, the last time you were reached out to by an NFL team to gauge your interest in coming back like the Rams did with Brett Favre earlier this week? When was the last time?
Well, Tampa Bay, they tried and tried, but that was, you know, that was right after I retired, so... still being able to probably play at that time, where I don't know how those guys, I mean, I heard recently too that Jeff Garcia threw his name out as a possible guy, wants to try to get a tryout with Cleveland. I mean, these guys are in their 40s and still wanting to play. I don't know. Kind of crazy in my mind.
When you're watching Josh Freeman on Monday Night Football, are you saying to yourself, I could still play?
I can't play still. I'm done. My body wouldn't allow it.
Your hip. It's your hip, right?
No, just overall. Just the beating that I took through all the years of, you know, from high school, college, the pros. I got hit enough that I don't need to go out and do that again. Now, if my body was in, you know, was okay, and I wanted to go put myself into that deal, maybe my ego talking, I'd say yes. I think I could do a better job than, you know, some of the guys out there, but, you know, that'd be a year or so of training and working out and getting myself in shape to go out there, and that's nothing that I really want to do.
Mentally, you could still do it. I mean, physically you can't, but mentally, when you're watching the game, do you see things and say, man, this guy is not even close, college or pro?
What I see from a lot of guys, I mean, it's kind of it's almost like self-doubt in their eyes. You can see it, and I talk, it's funny, because, doing my Pac-12 stuff with Coach Neuheisel, who I really like a lot, a great coach, he talks about that all the time, of guys that he's had that just, they had that look in their eyes, and he knew right away, oh, God, we're not going to have any chance with this guy at quarterback. And there's just an ability to go out there with confidence and with, you know, a mindset that you're going to succeed, that you're going to rely on your teammates, that you're not the only guy out there that has to do everything. You got guys around you to help you, and if you can go out there like that, and then you have some of the skills to back it up, then obviously I think you have a better room for success. But what's happened with Josh Freeman is really, it's got to be hard for him as a young man to deal with mentally, because he was the guy in Tampa, and now people are railing on him for going out after, a week of practice, week and a half of practice, and starting for Minnesota Vikings in a whole new system. And the fans, it's easy for them to rip on him, and the pundits, it's easy to say that he's no good, and oh my God, how awful he was, and are you kidding me? But give the kid a chance. Let him learn the playbook. Usually you have a whole month of off-season, preseason camp, and then you have OTAs and all those days to learn a playbook. This guy just learned a brand-new playbook. And yeah, all the plays are similar, but it's the terminology, and it's getting a feel for your teammates. And, give the kid a chance before you just, build up the gallows and take him to the city center and hang him in front of all the fans. And it's kind of crazy.
Wow. Jake Plummer with us for a couple of minutes. Jake Plummer in the Fiesta Bowl, a winning combination every week. We talk college football with Jake, of course. You're back on the set for Pac-12 Network this weekend, right?
No, not till next week. I'm on a Wednesday night and then November 2nd.
Okay. Yeah. So, but this week, the focus on UCLA at Oregon, and we've talked Hundley and Mariota a lot. But, Jake, we've not talked defense. If you're Oregon's defense, what are you preparing for against Brett Hundley in Saturday's showdown?
I don't know. For their defense, what they do is such a great job is just flying around with speed, and they tackle so well. You rarely see Oregon's, guys come up, duck their head, and try to hit you with just their pads. They're wrapping up. They're bringing guys down. And that's a huge, just technique issue that a lot of these – players these days don't take advantage of. And I think Oregon, they fly around on D. They cause turnovers. They swarm to the ball. If you watch them, they're always swarming to the ball. And if there's a ball that's loose, rarely ever does it not get picked up by an Oregon Duck, because there's 3, 4, 5 guys, swarming to it. And, Hundley's a talented quarterback. I really like his ability to stand in the pocket. And then if it's not there, to take off and run. Although I'm reading that their line was beat up a little bit, so obviously that's where a QB has to kind of adjust and know, okay, I better get the ball out. No going 1, 2, 3. Let's get it out to the 1 or 2, and if not there, then hey, use your athletic skills and make plays with your feet. And I think if he can do that and obviously not turn the ball over, I think UCLA has a chance to push Oregon, but I just don't think up there. I don't know if they have a chance to beat them. Oregon's just so tough at home.
UCLA's defense on the other side. Barr is a terrific player. They get back DeAnthony Thomas, the Duck Stew. You've got Mariota in there. What does UCLA have to do defensively against Oregon? Hope and pray, right?
Yeah, it's tough, because what Mariota's doing right now is outstanding. I mean, the guy is taking care of the ball. He's spreading it around. When he gets a chance, he's real patient in the veer that, faking and giving it, and then he just waits out that other defensive end or who has contain, and then once that guy makes that little slight mistake, he's out. And once he gets into space, there's no catching that guy. He's very impressive at what he does. Defensively for UCLA, they got to just fill the gaps and go out when they run those wide screens and the flares and all those to set up the downfield stuff. You got to wrap up and tackle. You got to tackle the guy with the ball, fight through the blocks. Let them get 4 or 5 yards or 3 or 4 or 6 or 7, but don't let them break those into long, big gains, because that's what Oregon makes their, little chunks here and there, keeps them in manageable situations. And you got to wrap up. You got to wrap those guys up and bring them down.
Do they have a loss in them, do you think?
Oregon?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
They've yet to be challenged, really. So we'll see if UCLA is worth the hype and the talk. If they're the representative from the South, then we'll get to see this weekend, what they got against, I think, the top team, if not 1, 2, or 3 top teams like the BCS shows in the nation. And, I think that UCLA is a well-coached team, very well-coached team. Jim Moore is a great coach. And I think that if they go up there with the right mentality, they can make it an interesting game. But it's a tough place. You got to get a few breaks, a few balls bounce your way up in Oregon in order to win.
Jake Plummer in the Fiesta Bowl winning combination. Jake Plummer joins us every week on the show. Brad Sussmat, we talk college football. Have you seen enough of Jameis Winston to give a view of him in the Heisman race?
I haven't caught a whole game of his yet, but I always try to catch his highlights and try to check him out. He's a phenomenal athlete. He's fun to watch. he just has a great personality too. I did see a little bit of the post game last week, and he was just real excited and happy and just loving the game right now. And you can tell by the way he's playing. You know, the FSU, whether they're worthy of the number two jumping Oregon, I mean, they beat Clemson, and I think that Clemson maybe had just a bad day, a little bit of an off day. But FSU took advantage of that, and they're in prime position now if they can, run the table to maybe get a chance at a national title. And if that's the case, it'd be fun to watch Jameis Winston play, because he's dynamic. He throws the ball all over the field. He trusts his targets out there, and when it's not there, I mean, he's making some awesome plays with his legs. And he's not a small kid either.
He's huge.
He's big and can eat up some green grass when he takes off. So it's fun to see young players emerge, especially ones like him that seem like they got just a great attitude and a great personality. And you know, you can see why that team's playing at the level they are, because their leader in this young kid is just a very exuberant and excitable player who likes to go out and get after it. And it'll be fun to see how they finish the season. Obviously, I'm biased. I hope Oregon can jump them, and I think with their schedule stacked at the end here, I think they'll have a better chance to move back up into that number two spot. But we'll see how it goes.
Part of me wants to see Oregon, Florida State. Now, I know everybody's into the Oregon, Alabama. I guess it's just I've seen Alabama. I think the SEC is going to cannibalize each other, and there's a loss coming somewhere that's not going to be expected. Florida State, could they have a letdown against North Carolina State this week? You wouldn't think so, but part of me wants to see Florida State, Oregon. What about you?
Me too. You know, I'm really actually tired of seeing Alabama up there all the time. They're obviously they deserve it. They've done a great job of taking a loss last year against Texas A&M, but bouncing back and finishing the season strong. And they play quality opponents too, so they're going to, if they do win, they're going to maintain that number one spot. But like you said, they got some tough challenges here late in the season. And, I don't hope for anybody to have a downfall or a bad game. But if anybody, I'd like to see the Tide take a loss so that we could get a fresh-looking team in Oregon and FSU. Be a great matchup. Be a lot of fun to watch. And we'll see what happens. It's obviously only halfway through the year, and a lot of things can happen. But watching Mariota and Winston out on the field during a national title game would be a lot of fun.
Let me throw another game at you that I think you're very familiar with. That's Oregon State at home against Stanford. Okay, so Stanford bounces back. Oregon State has a quarterback that is not getting a lot of attention, who I think is one of the better ones, not only in the conference, but across the country.
Oh, definitely. Mannion can throw the ball all over the place. He's proven that week in and week out. He's got a bunch of weapons. Brandon Cook's the number one guy who's dynamic receiver. I mean, that guy's got a bright future ahead of him. And the one thing I see that Oregon State gets into trouble is if you can put a pass rush on Mannion. He really has a tough time, not moving in the pocket. He does an okay job of that. But if you get guys coming, he's not going to get out of the pocket and make you pay. So Stanford, I see them with their experience on their D-line and their linebackers, and they run some real vicious stunts where they, picks and they knock the center off and the linebacker loops or a D-tackle loops. And if they're going to go up there and reclaim what they feel is their superiority in the Pac-12, Stanford's going to have to get after it in the pass rush and not let Mannion plant that back foot on those seven-step drops and wing it all over. And if any team can do it, Stanford can. So, it'll be fun to see, because Oregon State's continued to get stronger and stronger each week. But like I said, if they can get pressure on Mannion, I think it'll be a long day for him.
And Stanford is sitting there, Jake, with that one loss. They're a team that is still in the conversation for the national title game, in my opinion. Yeah, they have one loss, but they have Oregon the following Thursday night. You beat Oregon State, you got to take on Oregon. I'm just saying, don't discount Stanford yet.
No, by no means. I mean, they're a quality football team. They really were just inches away from making it into the title game last year with base, not the same team, but pretty much the same core guys. On offense, I think, Hogan, if he can play and make more plays with his legs, then they become a more, challenging team to stop. And, they're definitely in the conversation, and that's the tough part about the Pac-12 is we're talking Oregon, FSU. national title, and gosh, Stanford could go beat Oregon, and then all of a sudden, who is it going to be?
Right.
And how can we get one of our Pac-12 teams into that number two spot? Because, you know, once the FSU climbs up there and they don't have a real challenge, they've got a couple, but not any real hard challenges the rest of the year. You know, it's hard to leapfrog those guys after that one loss. But hopefully, you know, like I said, I think Oregon's our best bet. But of watching all the games, and I'm always pulling for an upset, or if Stanford falls behind, I like to see comebacks, as you well know. And,
yeah,
you know, it's hard to sit there and say I want Oregon to beat every team in the Pac-12, because, you know, if they face ASU in the Pac-12 title game, just to talk about that, I mean, I'd be obviously rooting for ASU, and then that would dash Pac-12's hopes possibly of having a national title contender. So a lot of things can happen.
Yeah, a lot of season left. Appreciate your time as always. Talk to you next Thursday, Jake. Thanks.
Hey, thank you, Brad. Take it easy.
You got it. Jake Plummer every week. Talking college football with us, Jake Plummer and the Fiesta Bowl. Appreciate the Fiesta Bowl and Jake Plummer. That is a winning combination. All things NFL on the other side with Clark Judge, also in 15 minutes. Michael Fabiano from the set at NFL Network. NFL Network and NFL.com's Fantasy Football Hall of Famer. We have a lot of fantasy football with Michael Fabiano in 15 minutes. We'll talk around the National Football League next. 30-year veteran covering the NFL, Clark Judge. I'm Brad Sussmat. Brad Sussmat, Sports360AZ.com. Check it out, Sports360AZ.com. Yeah, we're pros to preps, but we've launched our new site. Looks pretty cool. I'm sifting through it during the break. Sports360AZ.com. We're going to drop these down, not just in Arizona, as we continue to grow. And it's a lot of fun doing what we do. On a weekly basis, Clark Judge joins us, all things NFL, 30 years plus in the National Football League. Clark Judge is tonight Greg Schiano's final game as coach. They've taken out the billboard in Tampa. They haven't won a game. The players have revolted. There's mercy in the locker room. Josh Freeman, it feels like this is it.
Yeah, it does. You know, you haven't heard anything from the Glaziers, and they're the owners of the team, but it's hard to believe they can make it through the season with him. Is tonight it? I don't know. I mean, they're on national TV. If they're embarrassed, I think it could be. If they make it competitive, I don't think it will be. I think they'll probably go the season with him. But my feeling is that he's, one way or the other, he's a dead man, whether it's the end of the season or during the season. I think we've talked about this before. He's lost the team. He's lost his quarterback. Seems to have lost every game. I don't know what there is left in making a replacement at this point. I'm not really sure what can be done with that. But as I said, I think it depends on how this game goes tonight. Brad, I'm not talking about winning or losing. I think they simply have to be competitive.
Three games announced, Clark, over in London. Are we getting to a point, or are we there where let's just put a team in London? What's the NFL office's view of this? Because today they announced Jags, Cowboys, Falcons, Lions, Ravens, Dolphins all playing over there next year. Are we at a point to put a team in London permanently?
No, the answer is no. Roger Goodell would like to do that, but no, we're not. We're ways away, and honestly, I think they should be and are looking at L.A. before they look at London. I know Roger would want a team in London. He's said that many times before. There's this feeling that Jacksonville will be the team that goes there. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they want to get something there in the next 10 years or so, but I think that's kind of the timetable we're looking at. That said, is it a done deal? No, just for the fact that the commissioner wants it doesn't mean it's going to happen. Generally, what he wants, he usually gets. Mm-hmm. This one's going to be a little bit of a different sell, though, because of the difficulty with transportation, the time lag, everything. It's going to be a tough one to sell, but what he's always put in front of these owners is that, look at the merchandise you can sell over there. We've got a saturated market here. What about over there? I think they're going to find, the more they look at this, Brad, that the football that they're interested in over there is not American football. It's the football they've had for years.
How many continents can this game go to? I bring this up. Yesterday I was at a luncheon, and the owner of the Arizona Rattlers, so it's an Arena Football League team, but mm-hmm. they have been pursued to go to China, and they are going to China, and they're going to open some arena football camps in China that they want United States football over there. It's a small little league. It's the only feeder league right now, really, when you look at it, with no NFL Europe anymore for the NFL to get players. So they've been pursued hard to go to China. Can the league look at China? Can the league look at South America? Do you think that's where it's going?
Well, remember at one time they wanted to put a game in China. They were talking about doing a game in China as well, and they didn't do that. because of numbers of things not worth going into here, but they tried to do that at one point. But again, it was an exhibition game. I still think you've got the same problem there that you're dealing with here. I think if you're gonna do that, you almost have to have like a separate league or division or conference or something. I mean, mm-hmm. I just don't know how that's gonna work when you've got to play, you're in London and you've got to play San Francisco 49ers. I mean, someone said to me, well, what you do is the next week either have it off or you play on the East Coast. Well, I mean, the costs involved and the problems in terms of just the logistics, I think, would be enormous. And that's why I think it's going to take them a long time to work this out. They know, or Roger knows, the commissioner's office knows, it wants to go there because, again, as I said, money. They can make a lot of money there. But I would look back on that NFL Europe experience and say, how much money did you make there? I realize it was a minor league, sure. But how much money did you actually make there? They didn't. They pulled out of there. So I think they're going to have to do a lot of research to find out whether, in fact, Europe is ready or really wants the NFL. It's one thing to say we're going there and to put a game or two or three there and then say, oh, no, we're going to put, let's say, the Jacksonville Jaguars there and expect them to sell at Wembley Stadium. I think they're highly mistaken.
Because I'm looking at the injuries, and you and I talked about this last week, the number of injuries, the amount of money that's shelved over there on IR mm-hmm. That owners are shelling out at this point of the season. We're at the halfway point of the season. They can't find bodies or call him Brett Favre to see if he wants to play quarterback.
Right.
I just had Jake Plummer on. Jake's phone hasn't rung, but you know, he's talking about Jeff Garcia getting a call to come back and, or throwing his name in the ring. The NFL's got to find a place to find players to plug in at the midpoint of the season, doesn't it? And then they don't have that right now.
Yeah, you don't, although you have ready lists, and that's what these guys are sitting at home. They've worked them out. You know, you saw last week Peyton Hillis step into the Giants lineup. Well, there's a guy who had been out, but people knew where he was and where to find him, and he could step in there. You know, clearly he wasn't playing for anybody, but he steps in Monday night and becomes a star for them. He's gaining 36 yards, but still did what they wanted. And,
sure.
And I think until you can demonstrate that you can make money doing that. I mean, somehow you probably have to have a league like that underwritten by the NFL, much as the WNBA is by the NBA, because, you know, you try that UFL, that didn't work. I mean, and that was sort of an attempt to do that and make it a minor league for the major league teams to call up guys, and it really didn't work out. So the idea of injuries in football, that's nothing new. We've had that all the time.
Sure, but now
with the extended season, you know, 16 games, we're talking 18 or something.
Right.
We're trying to find more and more players. I just don't know how we're going to do a minor league that works.
Are you surprised Tim Tebow's phone hasn't rung?
A little bit, yeah, but, you know, it's funny, there's a different feeling about him, because people know what he offers them, and he gives them a different kind of quarterback, and what I'm saying that is that you've got to basically tear up your whole offense to kind of gear it around him. We saw what Denver did, and they did it successfully, and he did it successfully.
Yeah.
But you also take on, you know, the circus atmosphere, and that's why I thought New England was a good place for him. But I think the feeling was, if he can't make it there, sort of like, you know, we say in New York, if he can't make it there, he can't make it anywhere. Well, if he could make it with Bill Belichick, where is he going to go? And I know the Rams discussed him, and they talked about him, but you bring him in there, and let's just say, for argument's sake, Kellen Clemens goes down. Now you bring in Tim Tebow. Well, is he going to run that offense the way Clemens did or the way Bradford? No. You're going to have him running the ball a lot, much like a wildcat quarterback. And once you do that, there's no going back.
Well, it's kind of like
that's
Josh.
Denver did that
it's kind of like Josh Freeman the other night. I mean, you would have to just be learning on the job. And I bring this up because the caliber of play in the NFL now, at the midpoint of the season, with all these players going down, there's five games, Clark, that are double digits this week.
Yeah, and that game Monday night, Brad, was atrocious.
Yeah,
it was an atrocious game. I mean, as bad as the Giants were, they found somebody who was worse. And the difference there with Josh Freeman is Josh Freeman is your conventional type of quarterback. I mean, he's supposed to be able to throw the ball. He's been successful in Tampa. He was god-awful on Monday night. And honestly, if I'm Leslie Frazier, I sit him down at halftime. You have a chance to win that game. It's 10-7. You sit him down. You're going to tell me Matt Cassel, wasn't dressed, but that Christian Ponder couldn't have played better than that? You and I could have played better than that. He was horrendous. So I don't know what's going on here, but I agree with you. The quality of play and the caliber of play is awful. And people have theorized is it because of the off-season workouts, the limit to the number of pad drills, number of practices, no two-a-days, that sort of thing. I don't know. All I know is the football I'm seeing today isn't nearly as good as it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, and you and I have seen this league for a long time, and I know the numbers are still good, but I'm just wondering what it's going to look like a month from now. You know, what's it going to look like in 6 weeks from now when we have this many teams that can't find players? They're trying to dig guys up, and it just isn't good. Quickly, I want to I want to hit on the Brandon Merriweather story. So the safety of the Redskins gets suspended for illegal hits. He had it reduced. There's conversation that the coach is going to start to be fined for this stuff when they know that they can't control a player. What would your thought be on that?
I think it's probably a step in the right direction, because I think if the message isn't getting through to him, then you've got to get to somebody else. They talked about this again a couple years ago at owners' meeting, just saying, listen, if they're recidivists here, are there teams that continue to do this, we're going to start finding the team. So when you say the coach, it's basically the team. I mean, it's going to, the team's going to take it. But that's the problem, is that if the player is not getting the message, how is he not? If you can't get through to him, you got to get through to somebody. How about the guy who's talking to him, the coach? How about the organization you work for? Somebody's got to be penalized here. And the idea that you're suspending him, to me, that's a step in the right direction. But do I think that's going to change the way he plays? No, I don't. And I think we're going to have this happen again. And then I think you have to go, okay, where do we go next? And you hit the club where it hurts, money. And we started this conversation, we talk about money. Well, you start taking money out of a team's pocket, and they'll say, okay, hey, Mike Shanahan, get him to start playing differently. Otherwise, we're cutting him.
Let's go off that. Appreciate your time as always. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad.
Clark Judge, all things NFL. He joins us every week on the show. On the other side, more NFL. This time, guys, it's fantasy football time with Michael Fabiano. You can shoot in your questions at Brad Sussmat on Twitter. Michael Fabiano, NFL Network, NFL.com. He is the Hall of Famer. We're at the midpoint of the season. Who have been the biggest booms, the biggest busts, and who are going to be the biggest booms and busts in the next 8 weeks? You're not giving up on your team yet, right? We always talk fantasy for a little bit with Michael Fabiano of the NFL Network. He joins us next.
Giving you fantasy football insight you can't get anywhere else. With NFL Network and NFL.com fantasy expert Michael Fabiano, here's Brad Sussmat.
Let's talk fantasy football as we do every week. Brad Sussmat with you a day later than usual, but Michael Fabiano, NFL Network, NFL.com, fantasy football editor, the Hall of Famer. We're at week 8. We are halfway through the season. Who is your LMVP, least most valuable player at the midpoint of the fantasy season, the guy that you willing to say, Brad, I completely missed, or this guy has just blown my leagues apart?
CJ Spiller, no question about that. This is a guy who was drafted in the first round in every single league. At this point, he's scored double-digit fantasy points, I believe, once or twice at the most, and we really underestimated Fred Jackson's presence in that backfield. He's been the guy. Spiller's banged up with the ankle. It's amazing because there's been a lot of disappointments in fantasy, and most of them have come from the running back position. You can also talk about Trent Richardson as a potential bust, but at this point, C.J. Spiller has certainly not played up to his draft position.
Who is the guy that is the, by far, MVP that's not an obvious, you're sitting here midpoint of the season, as this guy has completely killed it, and I nailed it at the start of the year?
Well, we have to say, obviously, that Peyton Manning is the MVP, but if we're talking about a player who has really come out and done extremely well this season, who sort of wasn't on the radar, you'd have to say that's Knowshon Moreno. He's fifth in fantasy points among running backs right now. He's got 8 touchdowns. And this is a guy that people either didn't draft or drafted in the late rounds. The talk in Denver was really all about Monte Ball and the upside that he brought out of Wisconsin. Well, Knowshon Moreno comes back from a knee injury that he suffered last year, and he has been unbelievably good. Did you know that after 7 weeks, he has more fantasy points than Adrian Peterson? That's amazing.
Wow. Wow, that is amazing. Michael Fabiano with us for a couple of minutes. Okay, so the waiver wire move in the first 8 weeks, it's been the complete home run. Guy that on waivers, nobody had at the start of the year, that's been the home run.
This is going to be close, but I'm going to give you the Chiefs defense. And typically we don't talk a lot of defenses on our show, but listen to these numbers. The Chiefs defense has scored 122 fantasy points. That would make them the 8th best quarterback. That would make them the 2nd best running back. That would make them the best wide receiver by over 20 points.
Wow.
And the best tight end by over 18 points. So the Chiefs defense, which was dreadful in fantasy last season, it was dreadful on the field too, this is another example of why you don't draft a defense too early, because this happens every single year where a defense you're not thinking is going to bust out does, in fact, come out and have a huge season. The Chiefs' defense has been great. I think Phillip Rivers is probably a close second there, but those Kansas City defenders have been great for fantasy owners.
As we go into the second half of the season, Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer, NFL.com, and, of course, the NFL Network with us every week with Brad Susmat. Second half of the season, players that were hurt, are hurt, that are coming back that you look at and say they're going to be primed to be big point getters in the second half of the season. Could be Percy Harvin, Justin Blackman's already back. Give me some names there.
Percy is the guy that was right on the tip of my tongue there, so you're exactly right. Don't know if he's playing this Monday night. The Seahawks are going to bring him back slowly. But this is a guy who, if he was healthy in the preseason, would have been a top 15 wide receiver in fantasy. There's no doubt about it. Whether or not the numbers transition over to Seattle, we've all seen what happens to a lot of wide receivers who go to Seattle. Typically, the numbers aren't great, but he's got a ton of upside. He's a young guy. He's versatile. So Percy Harvin comes to mind. You also have to look at Shane Vereen. He was on pace to have a real big season before he broke his wrist. He should be back within the next few weeks. I believe he's eligible in week 11 or week 12, right in time for the end of the season, your stretch run into the fantasy postseason. So he's a player to keep tabs on. Andre Brown is another one. Got hurt early on in the preseason. David Wilson has been banged up. I mean, right now they're running Peyton Hillis out there. This guy was eating Doritos on the couch a week ago. And so Andre Brown is another player. Hey, if David Wilson's still hurt and Brown is 100%, he could end up being the starting running back for the New York Giants here sooner than later. So these are guys that you can stash away. Michael Crabtree's another one. Although Crabtree, I don't know that he's going to be back maybe within a month or so. You're talking about at some point in November, and a wide receiver coming off of an Achilles. We'll see how quickly that happens, but he is also someone to at least keep on your radar. Jonathan Stewart's another one who is going to be coming back from ankle surgeries. Now, D'Angelo Williams is going to continue to start for the Panthers, but that will go into a committee situation, and not for nothing, but the running back position is just so barren right now on the waiver wire that Jonathan Stewart's probably going to need to be owned in most bigger leagues, 12-team leagues, 14-team leagues, because he's got talent. We'll see if he gets the opportunity.
You mentioned the running backs being so barren. I could read individual questions, but most every question involves the Cowboys running back situation and DeMarco Murray. Where's that stand here on Thursday?
Well, right now it seems like he's coming back. And that's a welcomed report for a lot of Cowboys fans and for fantasy owners as well. If DeMarco plays for the Cowboys, he plays for your fantasy team. The Lions have not been good against the run this season. So with six teams off and injuries galore and Doug Martin out for an indefinite period of time, when you got DeMarco Murray on that roster, you got to play him when the matchup is right. I mean, DeMarco was really good. He was very good before he went down with that injury.
It seems like, Michael, in the leagues that I'm in, or just people that I talk to that play fantasy, I was in an airport in Chicago over the weekend. I heard a whole group of guys moaning and complaining about no running backs, no running backs.
Yeah.
What can you say to all the fantasy guys about what to do with running backs in the second half of the season? What should the strategy be?
Well, there's nothing out there. So your strategy has got to be stick with the guys that you drafted. Arian Foster, for example, had a slow start. Now he's starting to pick it up. Hopefully this hamstring injury is not that big of a deal. Ryan Matthews has actually played pretty well over the last couple of weeks. So ride the hot hand, but for the most part, I mean, if you drafted Ray Rice, you've got to play him. If you drafted C.J. Spiller, you probably have to play him unless you have a really deep bench and a good backfield. But you also need to be playing the matchups here. Eddie Lacy is quickly becoming a guy who you're going to start week in and week out. I love his matchup this week against the Minnesota Vikings. Giovanni Bernard has got a ton of upside. So if your backfield is in shambles right now and you've got younger guys on your team that have some upside, those are certainly replacements or potentially weekly flex starters that you can utilize. Play the waiver wire, but again, right now on the waiver wire, you're looking at guys like Mike James, for example, who's playing tonight against the Carolina Panthers because Doug Martin is out. You're looking at players like Peyton Hillis, who I can't believe we're talking about Peyton Hillis. He's been off the radar ever since he had that big season with the Browns a few years ago and then went on the Madden cover and everything sort of blew up in his face. So you're going to have to try to be clever and make educated lineup decisions. And if they don't work out, they don't work out. But this is further proof of why you needed to go after running backs early. Imagine if you didn't, what you'd be left with right now. Imagine if you didn't draft Marshawn Lynch in the first round, or LeSean McCoy, or Jamal Charles, Adrian Peterson, and guys like that. Because running backs who you drafted in the middle to late rounds, most of them are not bearing fruit right now. Most of them have been pretty average or disappointing. Rashard Mendenhall, he's done nothing this season. He's been extremely mediocre. Maurice Jones-Drew, you drafted him in the second or third round. He's done nothing. A guy like Spiller, we talked about, first-round disappointment. Lamar Miller, who, boy, I was 100% wrong on him. I like his talent, and I think he's shown that he's talented, but he's not getting the football enough to really make an impact in fantasy. So make educated decisions, and nine times out of ten, you're going to stick with your name guys, even if they're not producing.
A lot of people have Sam Bradford. This is the last question. A lot of people have Sam Bradford, yep. So I'm getting a lot of questions about Kellen Clemens in the Monday night game. What's your read on him for this week?
It's a quarterback-driven league, and so it would be hard for me to completely dismiss Kellen Clemens. I mean, we've seen Thad Lewis come out and have good games. We've seen a kid, Case Keenum, last week, who went into Arrowhead Stadium and put up pretty good numbers against a really good defense. So I'm not going to sit here and say that Kellen Clemens is the worst quarterback in the National Football League, and it's a great start for the Seahawks defense, which in that respect it is, but I can't see anyone starting Kellen Clemens out there. There are going to be other options out there. You'd have to be in a pretty deep league to start Kellen Clemens. Again, I'm not saying that he can't find success, but he hasn't in the past. This is a bad matchup against the Seahawks. If you're looking for help at the quarterback position this week, you've got to look to the Andy Daltons of the world. He's actually scored more fantasy points than any quarterback over the last 2 weeks. Carson Palmer, yes, he throws the ball to the wrong team too much, but Atlanta's pass defense has really been bad this season. And you could end up playing a guy who just doesn't have a good matchup because you have no other choice. Eli Manning's another guy. He looks lost out there. He has been just horrible, and he hasn't been able to exploit good matchups. He does have a good matchup this week against the Eagles, so it's one of those weeks where you roll the dice and you hope for the best.
I would think Percy Harvin would be in that role too. If you've got Percy Harvin, do you roll the dice on him this week?
The problem with Percy is that he's playing on Monday night. And so if we don't get word that he's playing before that, you don't want to be stuck. So if you have a Sidney Rice, or if you have a Golden Tate, or if you have a Doug Baldwin, and you also have Percy Harvin, well, maybe you want to wait and see if Percy plays. So in this case, at least if he's inactive, you have someone to plug into your starting lineup, and you're not getting a donut there. So, but I don't know that Percy's going to play this weekend, and if he does, I don't know that he's going to see enough snaps to really be productive. So I would tap the brakes on him just for this week, but definitely pick him up off the waiver wire.
Thanks for the time, as always, Michael. Talk to you next week.
All right, my friend. Take care, bud.
It's Michael Fabiano with us for a couple of minutes. Always good to catch up with Michael Fabiano here on the show. This segment of the Brad Sussmatz Show is brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you, Santan Ford. I was out at Santan Ford just this past week. Saw John Bernath, the head of the service department. You know, you can tell when a dealership's got their act together. The service department gets in, gets out, gets in, gets out. There's people that are being moved through, and you don't hear people grumbling. Have you been in a service department at a dealership where you hear people that aren't happy at all? Yeah, that's not the case at Santan Ford. I don't hear that when I'm out there, and I see a lot of people coming and going, and they're doing their thing. About the new car, the new truck for you coming up towards the holiday season, are you comfortable with what you're driving as you're going to hit the road for Thanksgiving or for Christmas? I know I've got to look ahead what I'm driving right now. I feel very good in what I'm in, the Fusion Hybrid. For me, it makes a lot of sense. Great gas mileage, a vehicle that I'm very comfortable in. People tell me that's a slick ride there, Sussmatt. The Fusion Hybrid from Santan Ford. Santan Ford, it is all about you. Of course, you can always check our content out. We are at sports360az.com, sports360az.com. I'm on Twitter. You can shoot me a note. That's at Brad Sussmatt, C-E-S-M-A-T on Twitter. And of course, White Mountain Radio, the great people at White Mountain Radio and across the state of Arizona. Thanks for joining us.